listening to Upfront on the Voice of America.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We're coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Now, scholars seem to agree with the view that when it comes to Africa, the perceptions held by many in the West has always been driven by the 19th century mindset, the kind pushed by early European explorers, often who referred to Africa as a dark continent, explorers like Henry Morton Stanley, John Speke, and many others. But, you know, we are in the 21st century, and with all the information and knowledge about the continent, you would think that some of those antiquated myths and negative perceptions about the continent of Africa and its people would have been debunked by now. Unfortunately, that's not the case, and for many in the West, that 19th century mindset still informs their understanding of the continent, and as a result, what they see is a persistently negative, stereotypical, and sometimes patronizing coverage of Africa, whether it's in academia, in development circles, but especially in the media. A recent terrorist attack in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, and how it was covered by Western media outlets, especially the New York Times, was at the center of this debate as Kenyans took to social media to complain that the Times was wrong in publishing photos of the dead victims. Kenyans on social media say that media outlets have double standards when covering tragic events on the continent like terror attacks, conflict, and natural disasters. So on the show today, we want to take a look at some of the ways the continent is covered in the news and how young people are using social media to challenge some of that coverage of their continent. We'll also hear from a branding expert on whether the continent could use a rebranding. Does Africa have a branding problem? This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's start off the show by listening to what you had to say about Africa's perception in the West.
I think the media has played a role in the way people view Africa. Much as bad governance is there, but still the way the media portrays it to the world. Because when you talk of bad governance, even in the West, even in the East, the leaders are bad. But why Africa only?
I think it's bad leadership that makes the West to have bad image of Africa. I think if the leaders have a positivity in their leadership, it will be much better. Our image will be much better.
Speaking like someone who is living outside, I see like racism is still there. They look at a black person like they're looking at a failure. And they think you're poor. That means your knowledge itself is poor. But this is not true. You see, we have some of the black people, some people from Africa who have achieved something, who have put something on the map, you see. So it's all about giving us chance, giving the youth chance, and see what they can do.
There's this side of the Western media which is happy to show the always bad side of Africa, not giving a lot of time to the little or few development programs which are successful in Africa. They are very good successful stories to be told, but they are given a little time in Western media.
Yo, 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 right now you sitting back and relaxing to my man Jackson on the Upfront on the Voice of America, outspoken alpha intellect.
Thanks to all of you who sent in their opinions on our show today. And we want to welcome you back, and in case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. On the show today, we are talking about what some refer to as a persistent portrayal, negatively, of the continent, usually found in Western media. There's no doubt that the continent has seen its share of conflict and continues to see some conflict, pockets of conflicts here and there. But concentrating on these stories as the main drivers of the narrative fails to account for the major progress and transformation taking place, especially driven by young people like Paula Rogo, a young entrepreneur who recently moved back to Kenya from the US to start her business, Kali Media. Paula says that part of her job is to challenge some of these old, worn-out narratives of the continent. She also tells me that there's a growing movement of young people in Africa who are using all kinds of media, especially social media, to push back against the stories that are either incorrect, in bad taste, or just straight out disrespectful. Paula joins me in the studio to talk to me about the recent controversy related to a photo published in the New York Times in the aftermath of a terrorist attack in Nairobi. What was it about the New York Times story that triggered the kind of response we saw from Kenyan social media users, especially Kenyan Twitter?
So what happened is the New York Times has a new East Africa bureau chief who's coming in. What happened is after the most recent attack in Nairobi at the Dusit Hotel, she did a write-up, as expected, but they shared photography that included photos of the dead, right? Which is not new for some Western publications. But what was different this time around was you had a platform in the form of Twitter where Africans could actually speak back. And you had a particular part of that platform, Kenyans on Twitter, who have been successful in campaigning
previously.
Yes, previously.
Right. So like in the issue of CNN.
Yeah.
Right.
Hashtag someone tell CNN.
Yes.
In which they were able to petition and get an apology from CNN based on a story they'd done a couple of years
ago. A story that reflected Kenya as a terrorist hotbed.
Right. Among just how media covers Africa. But here was an audience that says no. People on Twitter were asking I know her name, I don't know if I'll pronounce it well, so I'm going to try, had asked her to take down the photo. What she did was she blamed the photography department.
At the headquarters in New York.
Headquarters, and was generally how Kenyans took it, quite condescending in her response. And not to say that you can't be emotional and also practical in your argument.
Right.
We have just come from.
But there was a certain dismissiveness about the reaction.
And we felt it. We really felt it. And there was a sense of how dare you. You come into my country and do this. And so the backlash was huge, to the point that the New York Times had to, you know, give explanations, none of which were palatable to the audience. And the explanations were basically like, we have to cover
story the way it is, way it, you know. Is.
But the argument from Kenyans on Twitter was that, and in general, for black bodies around the world, they're covered differently, right?
When the value assigned to black bodies, especially, and, you know people that are suffering, right?
Killings of black men in media were being published constantly, despite African Americans saying that these images triggering, right? Constantly triggering. And what it is that in Africa, the African American black Twitter tends to push back or have always spoken out about how they're covered. In Africa, a lot of foreign journalists have been able to come into our continent and basically cover it freely, freewheely, nilly, with no one really pushing back and telling them, no, this is wrong. What's happening is this is the first time you're having, first of all, black bodies, and then also people don't respect Africa in general when it comes to the coverage of the world. I saw that as an Africa editor. When it comes to coverage of the world, we are
Right. You probably have a correspondent somewhere in North Africa covering a South Africa story.
Right. Or just like we could have.
Or no bureaus.
You know, we had a huge terrorist attack and was barely being covered here in the American media at all, right? But they will cover other things. So the hierarchy in where we stand both as black bodies and then as an African continent is not high at all. And so there was pushback and the arguments were valid. But I don't think the New York Times, as well as other foreign correspondents who pushed back against Kenyans on Twitter, are used to Africans telling them, no, you're wrong. No, you can't do that.
And you got that from the responses, the kind of interactions they were having with Kenyans on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah. I think from what I've seen, a lot of foreign correspondents were taken aback. But also what's happened, the dismissiveness showed up in that they said this was now becoming a freedom of press thing.
It's Kelpie. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We're talking about how Africa is perceived in the West, some of the narratives, some of the existing narratives, often negative or stereotypical, that exist in the West. Complaint being that Africa is negatively portrayed in Western media, and young Africans are using social media to show what they say is the real Africa. And one of the stories that we're talking about is the recent story in the New York Times. The story was about the terrorist attack in Nairobi that took place in Kenya, and the New York Times published alongside that story a photo of some of the dead, and Kenyans on social media called out New York Times and they asked them to take down that photograph. Joining me in the studio today is Paula Rogo. Paula is the founder of Kali Media, a media company based in Nairobi, Kenya. Do you feel that Kenyans on Twitter would be more effective if they allied, for example, with Twitter users in South Africa, in Nigeria, who are also very active in speaking out? I'm talking about these little enclaves that we have. They would be more effective, actually, if they march together and have one strong African voice to counter some of the perceptions of the narrative that is happening about the continent.
Two things. Number one, all these sort of Twitter enclaves, they do communicate with each other. They tend to be on very specific topics, but there are times when they overlap with each other. And I saw a tweet early on during sort of this back and forth with the New York Times where someone said, Nigerians on Twitter, you're being very quiet. We haven't heard you say anything.
Speak up. Yeah, right.
Or South Africans on Twitter, you're being
They're calling
quiet.
Out. They're looking for support, basically.
Looking for support.
Because
it's one thing for... And then also Kenyans on Twitter, which... was true to a point, tend to be elite,
more urban,
and so forth. So a lot of people dismiss them as not necessarily representing the whole country, right? And so what happens now if Africans on Twitter were the ones who are now speaking back to the New York Times? And, you know, the thing with the Kenyans on Twitter, it's not just on Twitter. It's now expanded and it's moved.
To there's other social media platforms.
No, there's a petition right now that's been signed by, last time I checked, over 5,000 people asking the Media Council of Kenya to not give credentials to the New York Times reporter. Based on this incident. Mm. And their reasoning was that there was racial bias in her coverage. So how do we know she can cover us?
So basically moving some of these conversations that are happening on the social media platforms to real policy changes happening. Finger activism.
As they call it, right?
Right.
And so now there's an argument of like, is this where is the line here? Is this freedom of press? Is this not? And I think these are new conversations, right? Because it's about race, space, access, patriarchy.
Perceptions, narrative, all these things, right? It is the beginning. I feel like it's, this type of conversation is happening at this point.
Taking control of how we are covered and who gets to cover us.
So my baby make you no good dollar, no good dollar. When the bed with the end.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. As we were saying, many in Africa say that they have struggled and still struggle with a misrepresentation of their continent, and they're not happy with it, that the continent is persistently portrayed in this negative, stereotypical, and often patronizing way, especially in Western media. So some are pushing back on social media. Others, like my next guest, are rebranding, say that rebranding the continent is one way to challenge these Western narratives or Western perceptions, negative perceptions about the continent. Clarence Kwaku is a young Ghanaian based in Canada. He co-founded a branding company based in Toronto. He joins me in studio where we continue the conversation alongside Paula. So with this wealth of knowledge in branding, I wanted to find out from Clarence if Africa has a branding problem, and himself being a photographer, how he can capture accurately and authentically the African continent.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. You know, as a photographer, you want to capture the moment. And, you know, when you're doing photography in situations like that, which are a little bit sensitive, you know, you're also cognizant of what's happening around you. So I think in many cases, you'll see photographers stop taking pictures and try and help people. So mm-hmm. I think it really depends on your proximity to the situation. Ultimately, though, you want to take pictures that are tasteful, but find a right balance of also telling the story. And sometimes the story is gruesome and it's not pretty, but, you know, you are people's eyes on the ground. And so you want to show them authentically what's happening. I think it's a different conversation to say, you know, whether you use those pictures or not. But, you know, your job as a photographer is to really try and depict what's happening on the ground, you know, even if it's a little bit hard to see.
Okay, so your job is to depict what is on the ground. Do Absolutely. You feel you have any other responsibility outside of what is happening in that moment in terms of how we will be perceived, the kind of images that you'll be taking, the angles? Do you have any other, I guess, ethical responsibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you got to consider the people in the situation and think a little bit about the narrative and telling an authentic story. You mm-hmm. know, the thing about a picture without context is you can really swing it and tell whatever story you want. So, you know, when I'm on the ground, what I'm thinking about is taking as many pictures as I can to capture the moment. And then there's a lot of work that happens after the fact. So post-production, selection, what pictures do we actually use? So, you know, I think it's a different conversation to say when you're on the ground, I'm thinking about being respectful. Absolutely. I'm thinking about the narrative and how do I take the pictures with an angle that tell a story that's authentic? Mm-hmm. And then after the fact, as I start to edit them and bring them together, how do I create a picture that's true to what happened on the day?
Is there something to be said about this argument that the gatekeepers of information on Africa for the longest time have been people in the West who are detached from the continent, have no idea or no connection to the continent aside from the fact that they just want to publish photos or information for their readers here in the West?
Yeah, I mean, I can see why people would argue that. And, you know, being African, I think I'm more sensitive to it. But, you know, the reality is, you know, they're covering things globally. And so I think it's a bigger question to say from an authenticity and integrity perspective, what are the principles we use when we're telling stories, whether they're from our own countries or from different countries? And I think, you know, Africa in the past, you know, the coverage has been very myopic. And so I think we're more sensitive and I think we have a voice now. So yes, I think there is an argument to say we've got to take a step back and figure out, you know, as organizations, what are the values that we have when we're taking pictures or sharing stories of countries that do have storied pasts?
Paula, As an editor yourself, what are some of the considerations you make before you publish a photo?
It depends on the type of organization. Some organizations have a whole photo department that picks the photos separately. But when it comes to sort of the final product, you're considering the story. The photo is supposed to complement but also add to the story that's being told. And give you a sense of the scene of what's being talked about. So you consider about, yeah, how does it complement? How does it add? But also how will it be received? I think sometimes people forget who is going to be on the receiving end of this, mm-hmm. right? And there are many eyes that will look at it. So you have to also try to think beyond the audience that you consider looking at it. And
in this case, say Western audience,
right?
You have to think about outside of the confines of, you know, the geography of, right. you know, your distribution.
Yes, yes. So the New York Times is New York, but of course it's global,
right.
as well. And I just think that, and it was very interesting to hear the reporter of the story talk about the fact that she was very detached from what photos went up. I don't know how it works behind the scenes of the New York Times, but I would like to think that if I fought for something as a writer, it would come through, or like my voice would matter as part of that argument. And when so I think that's what hit people. Would you be willing to argue for us? Do you also agree mm-hmm. that this was an issue?
Clarence, mm-hmm. let me ask you, as somebody who runs a branding agency, part of your role in working with either products or artists or companies on the continent is to kind of show a new Africa, different image of the continent. Talk to us about some of the campaigns you feel like works in trying to reshape how we think about Africa.
Yeah, no, it's a really good call out, because I think right now we're seeing a huge influx of, one, people moving back home. And we're seeing a lot of international brands really reach out into the African market. And so what you're seeing is, whether it's Coke or Pepsi, you're seeing a lot of ads that are more integrated with African culture as opposed to being exported. You know, I can speak specifically from the music. When we think about a lot of the artists coming out of, whether that's West Africa or even Southern Africa, a lot of the music is really high quality. And so the visuals now need to match that, right? And so in the past, you'd have a lot of people going to South Africa to do music videos. Now you're doing them in Nigeria. You have kids who are coming up who are really great videographers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think what we're trying to do is, one, show that we can do it, but at a level that really is world class. So when I think about, you know, my company as a branding agency, Pepe, is all about taking Western ways of working, I would say some of the world class quality, and really bringing it into the African market and taking brands that are fantastic at their core and really elevating it. And so, you know, I think that's happening all over the continent. I think we're seeing growth. It's now that there's a spotlight, and we're seeing that happen more often.
Talk to our listeners about some of the things that you've done. Specifically, you told me about a campaign that you did with a very popular artist on the continent.
Last year we were working with Mr. Easy. You know, I'm sure some of your listeners have heard of him. You know, definitely top five, if not top three, Afrobeats artist coming out of the continent, who recently had a new album called Lagos to London. You know, a lot of the music coming out of Nigeria is really popular in London. We've got a huge population of West Africans there. And so, you know, the whole concept was to take something iconic from both of the cities. And, you know, if you know anything about London, their double-decker red bus, right, it's just iconic. Everyone knows what it is. And in Nigeria, they have the Damfo bus. Mm. And it's really popularized by a yellow background with two black lines. So we said, how do we mix the best of both worlds? And came up with a concept. And, you know, we're lucky enough to have the opportunity to work with Mr. Easy and his team to build out a rollout. And, you know, it was incredibly successful. You know, the album sold, you know, I think it's over 150 million streams on the album. But a lot of the conversation was about this really cheeky and interesting marketing. And so we're seeing the opportunity to use marketing as a way to really call out not only the music, but also our culture in a way that can be understood globally.
Why is it important to brand Africa at this juncture in history?
You know, I think we're going to look back at this time, and the people who didn't act are really going to be sad. And I think one of the things I'm realizing is we're on the come up. Okay. And at this point in time, we're seeing lots of great media coming out of Africa. We're seeing lots of great ideas. We're seeing lots of great exports. And so I think it's really important to change the narrative that's been previously there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not so much that we're doing great things and we haven't done it in the past. We've always been doing it. Now we have a voice. And let's make sure that the voice people are hearing is positioned in the right way. Because in the past, I think some of the gatekeepers haven't done a fantastic job of really telling our story our way. So, you know, I think about Pepe Company or Pepe Co. is an organization that's really focused on telling African stories the authentic way. We did fight, don't mean to
make we break up. Oh. That was Clarence Kwaku, a brand strategist based in Toronto, Canada. He runs a branding agency, Pepe.com. You can check him out at Pepe.com. That is PEPPEH.com. He was in studio with me and Paula Rogo. So Paula Rogo runs Cali Media, a startup media company based in Nairobi, Kenya. So I want to thank both of you guys for sharing your insights on this very important topic. So remember that petition that Paula was referring to, the petition that was signed by Kenyans calling on the New York Times to pull down the graphic photos of the terrorist attack in Nairobi, Kenya. Their complaint basically was that by publishing these photos, the paper, the New York Times, failed to show respect for the people who lost their lives during the terror attack. And the petition called on the country's media council to sanction the publication and its reporter. That's the reporter, the New York Times reporter in Nairobi, Kenya. So Josephine Muthengi is in Nairobi, and she caught up with the people behind the petition, and she had this conversation with them.
Right, so this morning I'm sitting here with Nyagudia Kabari and Mudoni Maingi. Nyagudia is a lawyer, Mudoni is a marketer. We're going to be discussing some of the coverage that took place by various local and international media following the deadly terrorist attack here in Nairobi at the Dusit Hotel. There was an article particularly by the New York Times, which caused quite a bit of outrage. It depicted images of dead bodies, of injured people. And a lot of Kenyans took to social media to react to this article. So I want to see first what were some of your initial reactions when you saw the New York Times tweeting and posting up these pictures.
So I think for me it was from a very personal level. So I had people that I knew were in the building, friends that were in it. And so at the time when you were going over Twitter, you were looking for information on the attack. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is I saw the New York Times article float by, clicked on it, and the first image, the header image, was actually a picture of dead bodies. And then as it progressively went on, it was injured people, more dead bodies. And so it became a thing of dealing with the trauma of knowing your friends are in there, but also trying to see, are they actually in those pictures? Because it happened as it was ongoing.
Right.
So it was as the attack was ongoing, it wasn't necessarily after the fact.
Yeah, and I think that was a very shocking thing for people because, you know, we didn't know if these terrorists had been caught or alleged terrorists had been caught yet. Like you're saying, people had loved ones and friends in there. So as this is going on, you're seeing the images. What was your initial reaction?
For me, it was, I didn't have anyone in the building. But the thing that bugged me the most was the feeling of helplessness, that you're sitting in the house. In fact, as she said, you're just following Twitter, looking for information. And at the time the article was aired, actually, we weren't sure that it was a terrorist attack because the purpose of the article was to inform people that Al-Shabaab has taken ownership. So there were rumors that Al-Shabaab had taken ownership, but at the time we didn't know. All I knew was gunshots in Nairobi. There's been an explosion. So yeah, trying to call... Oh, wait, I did have family. Yeah, trying to call friends and family, but also just that whole idea of I'm sitting in my house wondering what's going on, and trying to get a picture of what's going on. And then this article pops up and it doesn't really add value to my life except to confirm that people are dead. Now it's up to you to figure out who the dead people are. And in addition to that, her response when she was asked to take it down for me was what irked me more.
Yeah.
Than the the pictures were illegal as it stands, but her response and her disregard for Kenyans was just like, no, this
so
is
we're
our
talking
country.
About the editor, the East Africa Bureau editor of the New York Times, Kimiko, who people started to attack her quite personally as well. So just as one of the big debates that came out of that is that how come we don't see such coverage when mass shootings take place in the West or in other countries, and yet, you know, people felt like Africans, it's okay to exploit us, but for them, they don't cover such recent images when they're reporting on
I mean, they
tragedies.
Do cover it. They do cover it, but they cover it after the fact and they provide warnings. So you don't open an article and just immediately find a header image of dead bodies as an attack is ongoing, as the facts, as Betty mentioned, remain unconfirmed. So I think the issue here is that when coverage is on Africa, on black bodies, on brown bodies, those sort of regards completely fly out of the window. They do not exist. But when you're dealing with a case that is predominantly West, where perhaps it's more sort of privileged bodies that are under attack, there's a lot more consideration that's put into the coverage. So it'll happen after the fact. They will publish the pictures. It'll happen with the warnings around graphic images, whereas in this case, that was not the case.
Yeah.
What we did is we put up a petition with all the facts and the complaints as well, and we had about 5,000 people sign it. And we also collected another petition that was going around asking New York Times to pull down the photographs.
Did you wrong? That be why I didn't sing this song. Loving you is all I want. I just want to let you know, man, I miss you.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all of you for joining us, for tuning in, whether you listen to us on our social media platforms, on the web, on our podcast or on radio. We also want to thank all of you who sent in your opinions. We always love to hear what you have to say about our topic of conversation. And remember, you can connect with us on our social media platforms. You can follow me at Upfront Africa. You can also follow Joey at Joey_Muthengi on Twitter and on Instagram. That's Joey_Muthengi, MUTHENGI. Also remember to check us out on Facebook. Keywords Upfront Show VOA. That's Upfront Show VOA. Like our page, share with your friends. And I'll catch you here same time next week. Remember, as the African elders say, if you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye, Africa.